Pat McCorkle founded the company. I was actually an actor for 20 years, and I was able to make a living at acting. Actually, Pat McCorkle cast me in a lot of productions. She did, and then she cast me as her husband. We've been married 25 years. Thank you, yes. It's working out well. What's that? It's a good role. It's a non-equity role, but there are a lot of benefits.
Welcome to Casting Actors Cast, insights for actors on acting in the business of show. Casting director Jeffrey Dreisbach takes you behind the scenes and reveals secrets to a successful acting career. You can find out more on the web at castingactorscast.com. Please enjoy, like, and share Casting Actors Cast. Now, here's your host, Jeffrey Dreisbach.
Well, hello. Thank you for joining us. Glad you could be here. Today, we're going to be talking about the monologue. That's right. The dreaded monologue. I guess actors dread it because, gosh, way back in high school and maybe in your BFA or MFA degree program or even in a conservatory program, teachers like to spend a lot of time on monologues. And to the point where you can work on monologues and you can sort of get turned off to doing monologues over time. And that's kind of unfortunate, I think. But I think that there's something to be said about the fact that monologues are really excellent tools for actors. First of all, they're very self-sufficient. I mean, it's only you, and what you bring to the table can really have amazing effects. And if you do it in a systematic approach, if you do it carefully, you can really find some rewarding material for yourself, and it can be quite useful for other things. And so, therefore, I think a monologue can be very useful. In addition to being a great tool, or if there are some general auditions that require them, if you're going to be doing, for example, an entire repertory company or Shakespeare company, monologues are pretty much what is being asked for. Anyway, so I was in this seminar, and I was alluding to the fact that I didn't think that monologues were really that much more important than, let's say, a root canal. And this agent, she just stopped me cold by saying, "Jeffrey, you're wrong. I have my actors doing monologues for me in my office if I just want to see a little something." And I'm thinking to myself, I'm kind of picturing the scene. Here's this young, nervous actor maybe having their first interview or appointment with an agent, and the agent says, "I'd like to see a little something. Can you do a monologue for me right here?" Just kind of don't know how that would work, frankly, but I respect the agent, and I respect that they see the value in monologues, especially for, you know, office entertainment. Anyway, the truth of the matter is that monologues are just as important now as they ever were. And as an auditioning tool, they might be not used quite as much, but they're still valuable on a couple of different levels. One is they're really, really good work training. It helps the actor stay very, very focused, really does put into practice some of the technique that you need to be able to demonstrate, whether you're doing a two-hander in an audition or whether you're on the set. Having a basic structure for monologue work can really serve you very, very well. And as I mentioned in a couple of other podcasts, if you look at current television shows, you're seeing more and more monologues. Television show This Is Us, which I'm a big fan of, by the way, and written by playwrights, you'll see some of the really most interesting contemporary monologues. And I think it's very, very exciting to see that. But I can tell you after seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of monologues that there are some basic pitfalls, some traps that I see actors falling into quite a bit. And so today is going to be really very much a hands-on series of pieces of information, rather, that I think you can really benefit from. And so even if you have a pencil and paper, if not, you can certainly listen to the podcast again and again, because I'm going to be going through this rather quickly. As I am fond of saying, I've had more coffee than God ever intended a human being have, and so I'm going to share very, very quickly today. So when you prepare the monologue, there are some simple basic preparation questions. Now, I hope that you listen to the podcast on cold reading, because monologue work is especially conducive. Ooh, good word. It's especially conducive to cold readings. And using cold reading technique on monologues can really be a great help to finding some interesting choices to make with the character that you're going to be playing. But here are some initial questions to ask your monologue. And literally, I honestly would consider writing these down, not today, I mean, as you're working on something, to write these down. First of all, the initial question you need to ask is, who are you? Just simply define your character. Who are you? I'm a man in the living room having a fight with my wife. I'm a 60-year-old man, and I'm in the park, and I'm feeding pigeons. I am blah, blah, blah. Dot, dot, dot. You fill in the blank. So that's question number one. Really understand who are you, and the more well-defined your answer, the more interesting choices will become available to you. Question number two, where are you? Well, your locale can really have a lot to do with the way your character behaves. Feeding pigeons in a park, that might be a very, very intimate and personal conversation, but yet a lot of actors don't realize they're outside. You've got to talk like you are outside. The third question, which I think is really important, which always gets glossed over, why are you speaking? You know, guys, we don't generally speak in monologues. That's why podcasts are so interesting, because it kind of is a running monologue for me, and we don't usually speak that way. But if you have a situation that requires you need to share what you are sharing, then you need to answer the question, why are you speaking? Next question. This would be number four. Who are you speaking to? I really think that this is equally important to all of the other questions to ask. Because in a very real sense, a monologue can be a dialogue if you've fully thought through who you're speaking to. Not only that, but there's a wonderful method by which you can personalize who you're speaking to such a degree that you can literally get their reaction, and their reaction can help spur on the next thought in the monologue. In other words, if I really think about that I'm having this conversation with my father, for example, and I visualize my father, and I see him standing there listening to me, but I also see him making a face. Well, that gives me a handful of choices to either be more emphatic, to pull back, be quieter. There's all kinds of dynamics that can be discovered if you answer the question, who are you speaking to? And now something from acting school. The next question is, what is your character's objective? I don't mean to make fun of it. But the reason you're speaking is because why? What? Because you need to share private piece of information to this person that you care about. Maybe you need to tell this person you don't love them anymore. Maybe you need to tell this person that you love them so much it hurts. What's your objective? Why are you telling this person this information? Well, if you're telling them that you're going to love, that you love them, for example, maybe, just maybe, they'll tell you they love you back. Or maybe, just maybe, they'll say they never want to see you again. So the objective can be very, very powerful and very, very important. The next one, how does your character change? I don't think a lot of actors spend much time on this particular element, but what I call the transformative experience is one that I think can be extremely useful, and some wonderful discoveries that a monologue can be made. What I mean by the transformative experience, and that is that if you're going to be sitting in the park bench and you're feeding pigeons, and you're trying to talk to the pigeons and tell them how much you love them, how are you different after you've said what you came to say? How has that changed you? And you can really get that transformative moment in any monologue. You either feel satisfied, you feel mad, sad, glad, indifferent. All of those are choices as a result of the information that you've shared to your non-existent realized partner. I hope that kind of makes sense. It's really very, very useful. There are a couple more that I want to touch on as well. These are all the internal questions and the initial questions to ask. But this is now an external kind of question. How does the speech start? How does the speech start? I guess what I mean by that is I love seeing a prior action before seeing the actor speak. What just happened that prompted you to say what you're going to say? The prior action also is a great way of, and it's maybe a little manipulative, I guess, but it really is a way of garnering attention and feeling more in control when doing a monologue, is if you get that prior beat that something just took place that prompts you to start talking becomes really a useful tool. And then conversely, at the end of the speech, what is the future action? Do you have expectations of something great happening? Do you see by your partner's look, the non-existent partner, that is, do you see that they are suddenly sad or that you said something hurtful or wrong, or fill in the blank? So those are some really amazing questions that I think you would do yourself good. You would do yourself well by going through and checking out those questions. You would do yourself good. Did I just say that? I hope you know what I meant. Anyway, let's talk about some other internal questions that happen. What is the subtext that you're using to meet the objective? So in other words, what are your inner thoughts and feelings? Like, you could be saying how much you love that person, but really deep down you don't love them very much. So if your objective is to tell them that you love them, but you know secretly that you really don't. In other words, you can complicate the heck out of out of these monologues if you want to. But understanding what the subtext is really can be useful. What sense memory tools are you using? You know, the Stanislavski method, their sense memory, putting your surroundings in a place where you can have immediate identification, and that can also connect to your character's inner life, the character's energy, their mood, their mental state. All of those things can be very, very helpful. Here's a few more externals, I think, that might be worthy of your consideration. This also goes to character. What kind of physical state is your character in this monologue? Are you exhausted? Are you angry? Are you tired? Are you thrilled and happy? Those are some of the externals that you can really bring to the table. So I've just given you a whole bunch of things to think about as you're filtering through your monologue and using some of these things. Now, some of them may be more useful than others. I don't certainly suggest that you try and cram every interpretive element you can come up with into every monologue. I think that that's a waste of time, only because no one emotion is more important than another, especially when it comes to human interaction. More interestingly, there are several emotions going on simultaneously that make it more interesting, more fun. So here's a few negative things that I've seen in monologues. Common mistakes, let's just call these common mistakes, that I see monologues happening all the time, whether in auditions or even on the set when shooting a film or a television project and there's a healthy speech. It's always amazing to me that even in auditions that actors still make these very, very basic mistakes. So let's nip those in the bud right away, shall we? One is, where is the focus for the other character? If you're the actor, where are you looking? I still get actors asking me if it's okay for them to look at me during their audition. The answer is an emphatic no. Do not look at the people you're auditioning with if it's an audition. Just like you wouldn't look into a camera if you're doing a scene that has a long monologue to it. That just doesn't happen unless it's a very specific reason that's being asked for. But keeping your focus on the other person, the imaginary other person, is really the best way to do it. And like I said earlier, you can really create that other person in front of you. You can use all kinds of interesting ways to project that person in your mind's eye. But I would also suggest to you that you need to be a human being. If many of the monologues I see, the actors are staring so long and hard at that person the entire time that it creeps you out. People don't look at people that long. And so be very naturalistic, please, when you're looking at that other person. Your eyes can move because your brain is at work. Lots going on. You certainly don't have to stare and hold a gaze of an imaginary person in your monologue. I see all kinds of inconsistent or split choices. It's really vital to make sure that the choices are very, very clear while putting together all of these elements that we talked about. The other thing I see oftentimes, especially in film and television, is that the character is lacking a point of view. And that simply means that the actor is choosing to make more neutral choices in the hope that they'll be more likable and more fitting for the camera lens or the film lens. And that's a mistake. That's a mistake. Keep filtering any of the monologue that you're doing through a naturalistic perspective. And taking a point of view is the heart of what your character is all about. The fact that you're sharing this emotional life means that you have to have a clear point of view. The other thing I see all the time is that we miss the arc of the monologue. And you understand when I talk about the arc of the piece, every monologue has a beginning, middle, and end. But the arc of the piece is what's the driving force that maintains the energy of the piece until the very end. Sometimes there's an emotional shift. You're angry, you're angry, you're angry. Now you're talking something out, and now you're not quite as angry as you once were. So the arc of the monologue, exactly what is your arc in your monologue? Huge is just beginning too quickly. You introduce the piece and then you go right into it. It's incumbent upon the actor to take back the moment by taking a breath, a beat, and a pause, and then begin your monologue. Don't go quickly. You don't have to rush into it because of some bizarre ticking time bomb that you have somewhere in your head. Take your time. People take their time when they speak long in terms of monologues. People take their time naturally, as long as it's not a forced time signature that you're doing. Conversely, I've seen monologues, they end so quickly and then they break character. It's like talking, talking, talking. Okay, I'm done now. Understand that last final beat can have a tremendous impact both on the emotional state of your character and can leave us with a positive lasting impression if it's an audition. So that ending beat can really be valuable to you, I think. So don't dismiss that. And finally, the other thing is I just don't want to see your acting. I know that's kind of weird, but oftentimes I'll write down when I'm watching an audition, for example, I'll write down presentational. In other words, you're showing me how the character is acting as opposed to just acting. You're showing me how the character feels as opposed to just feeling. You're showing me how skillful you are as an actor by saying the words so eloquently and well, and yet I still see you showing me. The more fully invested you are in the character you're playing, the more interesting choices you make, the better the audition. Simple as that. Plain as day. Period. So when I see a clearly defined character, clean choices of time, space, purpose, realistic, believable moments, that the actor is very, very connected to the material and is totally immersed, that the actor is holding the stage, has an invested point of view, those are all really exciting things to experience with you when you do a monologue. So those are, I think, some things to shoot for when doing a monologue. I hope this has been helpful to you, because it is the culmination of the actor's connection to the character through the author's intentions that produce memorable auditions and performances. So missing any one of these can literally shift the focus away from being in the moment back towards a lack of what I call connected truth. It's the lack of that connectivity that I see most often. Wow, that was a lot. And that, boy, that 20 minutes go by really, really quickly, didn't it? So listen, let me know what you're thinking. CastingActorsCast.com. Thanks so much. I'm Jeffrey Dreisbach.
You've been listening to Casting Actors Cast with host Jeffrey Dreisbach. Find out more at CastingActorsCast.com and let us know if you would like us to cover topics you're interested in. Thanks for listening. I'm Matthew DeSarno.